So today's agenda, aside from the introduction, we're going to talk about signing in and signing out of Link programmatically. We're going to talk a little bit about presence and contact management. Then we're going to show you how to start an IM conversation. We're going to show you some resources for further reading, and then we'll take your questions. Now, with questions, what you need to do is as the question occurs to you, post the question in the IM panel of the session here. We'll have somebody who will collate those questions as you ask them, so feel free to ask as soon as they come up to you. And then at the end, we're going to have a Q&A session where we'll post all of the questions that people have asked on the sharing stage, and we'll address the questions one at a time. So your questions will be answered. So by way of introduction, in case you're new to the Link API, it's managed, which means you can write C# or VB.net. It's designed for presence and contact management as well as conversation management. And we have three development models. You can either drag controls onto a Silverlight or WPF application. You can simply automate the Link client, which means you can programmatically start a conversation window and let Link take over from there. Or you, if you want, you can create your own UI from end to end and replace the Link client, let it run in suppress mode, and then give your users a unique experience with Link. This replaces an earlier release of unmanaged client API called the UCCP API, which was great, powerful, but complicated. So with that, let's move on to our first presentation. Take it away, Wei.
Hello, this is Wei. I'm engineering test engineer. testing engineer in a Link client SDK. So today I'm going to be talking about the signing, sign out, and presence and contact management. Also, the signing, sign out will be in. Now we are in the correct slides. Okay, the signing, sign out. The Link can be signing, sign out in non-UI suppression mode and also the UI suppression mode. So first I'm going to talk about the signing, sign out in the non-UI suppression mode. So there are six basic steps to do the signing, sign out. First one is to you get the Link client instance by calling get client method. Then you can get the UI suppression state of the client by calling the in suppress mode. If the suppress mode is true, then extra steps is required, which will be covered in the next slide. Step three is to register for the Link client state change event, which will notify you when the Link client state changed. So the next step is to get the current client state. If the client state in step five, if the client state is signed out, then you are safe. You're safe to call begin signing. What I mean safe is you will, if it's not in the signed out state, you call sign in, you will get exception. But you can handle that exception for, of course. Once you're done with your Link activities, then you can do the sign out. You can call begin sign out and end sign out method to do the sign out. So this is how you do the sign in and sign out in UI suppression mode. Okay, so there's another option for Link to be running in the UI suppression mode, which means the Link process is running, but there's no Link desktop UI showing up. So how can we do that? In addition to the previous slide, we will do some extra step in the UI suppression mode, which I show them in this slide. It's get the UI suppression state of the client by calling in the UI suppressed mode property. If it is true for the in suppressed mode, we need to initialize the Link client, which means the Link client should be initialized, which means we need to start Link client process. Then after that, we can call begin initialize and end initialize if the client state is uninitialized. After that, we can do register link client credential requested event. This event is optional. If it is raised, which means that when you call begin sign-in, your sign-in credential is not correct, then you will be prompted with this event that gives you a chance to put into the correct credential to sign in the link. Okay, so let's go to the demo for signing and sign out. Let me just share my remote desktop. Okay, I have a project running here to show signing and sign out. So first of all, I'll show the signing sign out in the non-UI suppression mode. You can see that I have a link desktop client running here. Let me just run my test application. So I have this signing sign out application here. It takes signing address, username, password. You can see that right now the UI suppression state is false, which means the client is in the non-UI suppression mode. And the current state is signed in. I have two buttons here, sign in and sign out. Right now, the state is signed in, so let me just sign out. So in here, you can see that something is happening behind the scene. I've called begin sign out, and then I can see the events for the client state change. It changed from the signed in to signing out. And in the callback for the begin sign out, we call end sign out. And next one shows that the state changed from signing out to signed out. Okay, let me just show how can we sign in. If we provide empty signing address, username, password, and just sign in, the client will sign in correctly because previously we had saved our credentials. But if we want to sign in as a different user, we can put in the user signing address and this username and then the password. Now we sign in to a different user. Okay, it's signing into another user. We can see here for all the events. The state changed from signed out to signing in and changed from signing in to signed in. Okay, let's look at the code. So when the application is loaded, the window is loaded, we get the client object. We register the state change events. So here is the logic for determining whether the client is in the suppression mode or not. So we can just check in suppressed mode. If it is in suppressed mode, we will register the credential requested events and some other events, of course. Then we need to, okay, I'll cover that later, begin initialize. Then when we click on sign out button, we just simply call begin sign out. And in the callback, sign out callback, we call end sign out. So if we want to sign in, we just call begin signing with user UI, domain name and username, password. In the signing callback, we can do end signing. So this is that simple to do the sign in and sign out. So in order to do the sign-in sign-out in the UI suppressed mode, we need to exit the link first, just to make sure the link process is not running. Oh, there are two. Let me just kill those, because we have another session here to this machine. Okay, now, excuse me. Now we don't have any link process running. So in order to get into the link UI suppression mode, we can just simply run this regkey. So set the regkey UI suppression mode to 1 to enable UI suppression mode. Yes. So now we are in the UI suppression mode. You cannot, once you are in the UI suppression mode, you cannot start link client from your like start menu. You can only start the link process by calling begin initialize. So let's run this application again. This time you can see the UI suppression mode is true. And the current state is signed out. So we have already called begin initialize because we have determined that UI suppression mode is true. After the initialize, we can see link process is already running here. The communicator process is already running. So it's signed out. How do we sign in? We just put in the signing address. Username and password. We just sign in. You can see the states change from signed out to sign in and then to sign in. And that's it. This is for the signing in and sign out in the UI suppression mode. Okay, so if I exit the application, the link process is gone, should be gone. Okay, it's not gone, why?
It's delayed, it takes a while sometimes.
Yeah, probably it will take some time. And let's look at the code. So the begin initialize. I do this when it's in the link suppression mode, we will do begin initialize. And after the application exits, we're doing begin shutdown to shut down the link process. Okay. Let me switch back to the PowerPoint. So next topics will be presence and contact management. So in contact management, we have groups for these all these link clients. And we can get the groups by calling the contactManager.groups property. There are three special groups there. The first one is frequent contacts. The second one is favorite contacts group. And the third one is other contacts, which is a custom group type. But it's a special group. So you cannot change its name, you cannot delete it, you cannot do whatever you want on the regular custom group. But you can add contacts, of course. In order to add, remove, rename custom groups, you can do these things. You can call begin add group, end add group to add custom groups. You can begin remove group, begin end, remove, end remove group to remove any custom groups. Also, you can rename these groups. So when you are doing dealing with the groups, you probably want to listen to these events. Group added, group removed, and name changed. For contacts, you can add and remove contacts in the group. In order to do that, first you need to find the contact. There are usually two ways to find the contact. You can do begin lookup and lookup to find the contact, to resolve the contact from the server, or just get the contact by UI. You can just use the UI to get the contact immediately. So once you get the contact, you can begin add contact on the target group. So usually two events will be interested in two contacts. The one is contact added, the other one is contact removed. So there is also a shortcut way to remove contacts from all groups by calling begin remove contact from all groups. So this is a very straightforward, so I don't have a demo for this presentation. I'll go to the next topics for presence. So presence of a contact is usually, we call presence in our group, but it's also called contact information. So you can get contact information by calling get contact information. Usually you can get availability, activity, display name, title, etc. So once you get, you need to register for the contact information change events to just monitor whenever the contact has changed its information. So here's the question. How do I get the presence of a contact? In order to get the presence of a contact, you need to subscribe for this contact's presence. Two ways to do that. One is add this contact to the contact list. Link will do the subscription automatically for you. If you don't have this contact in your contact list, you need to subscribe for this contact information explicitly. To do that, you can create subscription and then add contact to that subscription and then subscribe. Here, I will have a demo to show how to do the presence contact, presence subscription. Let me just see. Yeah, we can see that the communicator process has exited. I need to go back to the non-UI suppression mode. Let me start. Oh, sorry, I didn't. So, we can see, I just started communicator, sorry. Now, communicator, now the communicator starts. Let me show you the presence sample code. So you can see that I have three contacts in my all contacts group. So if I want to get contact information for these guys, I can just simply say put the contact UI here. I can say get contact information. You can see that I can get availability of this guy and the display name of this guy. So if I want to get contact information, for example, let's say 6, another contact, which is not in my contact list, get contact. You can see the availability is none, which pretty much means unknown. And the display name is just UI. It's not resolved. How can I get the contact who is not in my contact list? I need to subscribe. So we can see two events is raised, contact information changed. Now we can get the contact information. This time we can get the contact information because we have subscribed for this contact. Let's see the code. So here's the code that we get contact information. We get the contact, and then call get contact information for the availability and the display name, and then update UI. If we want to subscribe for that contact, we need to get the contact first, register contact information, change the events, and create the subscription, add this contact to the subscription, call subscribe with the refresh rate, some refresh rate, and information that you are interested in. For example, this time I'm interested in display name and availability. And that's it for the subscribe. I'm done with my presentation. Next one will be my colleague Anshu. Okay, I'm handing over to Anshu.
Thank you, Wei. Hi, this is Anshu, and in today's presentation, I'm going to cover the IAM conversation. Let's see. So how, it's just a start an instant message conversation. We'll do it as a demo. But how do we start IAM conversation? So first, we have to create a conversation using calling add conversation and using conversation manager class, and then you can use this event conversation added event, and after that you have to add the participant. So we can start adding the participant with whom we want to make the conversation, and we can create and send an instant message by using the IAM modality or the and also here in IAM instant message content type, we get more than three different types of messages which we can use to make the conversation, which would be in like plain text, GIF, HTML, INK, and rich text, which is pretty vast set of a list here. And then we can call begin send message and end send message. That. There are few very important events which we can register and make use of, and few of them are listed over here is like conversation added and all. I think the most important would be to see would be instant message received. You can, when you're sending a message, whenever the receiver receives that message, you can have registered this event that the message got received for the from the third party or from the participant. So this is pretty cool. And there are more information about IAM conversation on this MSDN link, which you can refer. And with that, I'll go to my demo on instant message. Okay, and I'm switching the screen. See about that. So here is my demo machine, and I'll start with the demo the form first. I'm signed in with the link account, and I have to add the participant. So I'll just add my colleague over here to start the conversation with, and I can add this participant, and I can do the start conversation, and then it's actually coded in my coded to send the hello world in the IAM conversation. And let's see if he received the message hello world, and he can reply back that he got the message. Yeah, he got the message. So this is what it is. It's pretty simple. The IAM conversation just uses three steps. I'll just dive down into code to show you how does it look. So I have created a link client, which is like what Wei also mentioned, that we got to get the client. And then after that, first I'm adding like, I'm using the conversation manager and calling this, registering this event, conversation added event. So if you go in this event, conversation added event, you see that I'm adding that participant, which I just like put it in the Windows form, and I'm contacting the participant with the URI, and this is also registering the participant added event. So in my participant added event, I'm checking whether I'm not adding the contact with myself. If not, then I'll just see that okay, the this one is, I'm using the IM modality in it, in here, and then sending the hello world. So in my presentation, I mentioned that there can be like so many different instant message content type, and you can see it over here. So if you, so if you see here, you can see that there are all this different content type you can use to send the message. But right now I'm using plain text, so it sent the message. And then I'm calling this instant begin send message over here with this, with the message and my callback and with the IM modality. So this is what it is. And yeah, so this is how we are, I'm sending the message on the IM conversation. This is all about my demo. And with that, I'll hand over my presentation to John. Thank you all.
Back I am. So, folks, we have completed the presentation portion for the morning. At this point, let me get the slide back. There we go. We're the, as presenter, and, oh, that's my slide. So we have a set of resources that you can go to for more information about what we looked at today. The most important information that you want is in the link 2010 SDK documentation, because it's comprehensive. It covers the whole class library and gives you a lot of great how-tos. But if that isn't enough for you, we have another couple of resources which are great. One is the Link Developer Center, which gives you links to all the information you need about developing both client and middle tier and server level Link applications. Finally, we have the Microsoft Link Client Developer Forum, which is a great place for you to ask questions, and your peers who have the answers can answer the questions, or the Microsoft engineers and the team will answer the questions if they're not resolved by your peers. And this is a great way for you to get pretty much any question you have about the Link Client API answered. So with that, we're going to hand it off to Kai. He's going to load any existing questions that you've got, and we'll see if we can answer them.
Actually, there are only two questions so far, so I can just read those off.
All right.
But there's also some of the attendees had an issue where they couldn't view the remote desktop session. So I'm wondering if it would make sense, if there would be a way to display some of the code in another way.
It can be added in the form of slides. We could, that might take a few minutes to...
Yeah,
put it,
so we may not have enough time.
Or we can just simply attach the project to the presentation, and people can download it.
Okay. So, for those who encountered the technical issues, we will work to post the code. Is that,
yeah.
So we'll post the code later, so you can take a look at that, and we'll also post this video for everybody. And so hopefully that will help clear up some of the questions, but if you have any questions at this point, then we will get started taking those. We already had two questions to begin with. The first one was, so going in order of the slides, so the first question is around contact management, and they want to know how to find out if a contact is in the list. So I think maybe they want to know if the contact is in the contact list.
I assume that whether they want to know whether the contact is in the contact list, right? No matter which group it is in.
Right. They just want to know.
Yeah. So the only way to do that is just to go to iterate all the groups, and in within the groups there is a groups itself is a contact list. It's a collection of contacts. Then you iterate every contact within the group so that you will know whether this contact is already in the contact list. That is the only way to do that.
Okay. So follow-up question. Let's say they're in your contact list already and you try to add them.
Yeah. Another thing. Okay. That's a good question.
Yeah.
Let's say you found that it's already in the contact list.
Right.
Then within this contact object, there is a... groups. I don't remember the exact name. It's a group property.
Groups.
Groups, yes. Which contains all the groups that this contact is already in. So if you want to add this contact to the group in which this contact is already existing, uh-huh. you will get the exception.
However, you can add one contact to many groups.
Yes, multiple groups, that's possible.
Okay, so there is an exception that you want to look for, potentially catch.
Yeah, right. Right.
Okay, so hopefully that answered that question.
Okay.
And then the next question is around contact management again, or presence. Can you determine when the contact is the active speaker through the contact information subscription?
No, through the subscription, it's only the presence information. It doesn't have any other information such as whether you're active speaker or active presenter. It's just most of them are the Active Directory information and other presence information such as you are active or available or offline or something like that.
So a good way to think about this, if the question is around something, some activity in it, or some property of an ongoing conversation, then programmatically you would start by looking in the conversation namespace. So it's Microsoft.link.model.conversation. So that gets you to objects that are about the conversation. So we're talking about a participant of a conversation. So you can go one of two routes. You can either look at properties of a given participant, or if it's a question about who's speaking, then you want to look at modalities of the conversation. So let's start with looking at participants. So there's in the conversation object, there is a collection called participants, and that contains each person in the conversation. So then from the participants collection, you can go to an individual participant object, and that participant object gives you various methods which are interesting, but it also gives you some properties, one of which is called properties, which is a collection of properties on the participant. And those are enumerated by an enumeration called the participant property. Well, that will tell you a lot about the participant, but unfortunately what it doesn't tell you is whether this particular participant is speaking or not. So the next step would be, well, if I can't get the information from the participant, is it available in the audio-video modality? So then, if you're going to do that, look there, then you go to a different namespace. That's Microsoft.link.model.conversation.audio-video. And inside of that namespace, this is all objects related to a given conversation. There are a couple of interesting classes. One is called audio channel. Another one is AV modality. So we're looking for a property on audio channel or AV modality that tells us who the active speaker is. Well, audio channel doesn't help you. It just tells you how to send and receive DTMF tones, which is not what we're looking for. So the next candidate would be the AV modality. And that AV, by the way, AV modality is a child of the modality class. Its base class is modality. So the modality base classes were all really great properties that are general to all modalities are found. So now that you've been to the audio video namespace and you've seen that AV modality's parent is modality, you've got to find modality, which is back in the conversation namespace. So you look for the modality class, and you look at its properties, and there is a property called properties, enumerated by modality property enumeration. We're going a long way around to answer your question, but we're getting as close as we can get. The modality property enumeration has many enumerators, some of which are properties specific to audio, some are properties specific to video, and some are properties specific to instant message. These are all the modalities whose parent is the modality class. As I look through the audio properties, I see a lot of pretty interesting individual properties, but what I don't see is the URI of the active speaker. So in this case, I don't think that we can obtain the active speaker through the API. It's an interesting ask. We can we can talk to our feature team about adding that property. But in this digression that I made, you can probably use this information to find other information about the audio conversation that you hadn't thought you needed until you saw this great enumeration.
So we can follow up on that on the forum.
Yes, we can.
So I'll follow up with that. Okay. Thanks, John. Mm-hmm. So the next question is, using the contact presence code, would you use the same code and expect the same behavior when subscribing to external users on an open federation system versus users within the host organization?
Yeah, I can answer this question.
Okay.
So it's pretty much the same, except that the federation system must be really a federated system, right? It cannot, let's say, for example, Microsoft MSIT has federated with Yahoo. So we can get Yahoo users' information, presence information, by using this piece of code. But if somebody is like on a other system which is not federated, we cannot get that. The behavior will be pretty much the same, except that some information you won't be able to get. For example, if they don't have like first name and last name, then you will get an empty string. And you can also get some information which is pretty probably not available within the host organization users, such as the icon URI. For example, we can get the Yahoo icon URI so that we can display that the icon to mark that this user is coming from Yahoo, things like that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question, Carl? Okay.
One more thing I need to probably I want to add is to get the contact from the Open Federation system, you can only get that by calling get client get contact by URI. You cannot look up or by calling lookup, because lookup will get the information from the link server, which is not available for these contacts.
Interesting.
Okay.
Okay. So we're still taking questions for another 10 minutes, we'll say. Anybody else have any follow-up questions? So something I will mention is we're planning on scheduling a part two for this presentation. And that will cover additional topics around audio conversations, managing conferences, link extensibility, such as conversation window docking, contextual data, and am I missing anything else? I think those are the next topics we'll cover. That's in an upcoming presentation that we're still scheduling. That should happen in maybe 2 weeks from now. And I will update the forums when we lock down on the date and time for that. Do we have any other follow-up questions? Everybody understands how all this works, how to sign in and sign out? You don't have any questions about caching the link client when you sign out, or any questions around what if the end user signs out in link? How should you handle that?
Yes, those are good questions to ask. Maybe one question I had, if I've signed in with my credentials and then I sign out using link and then I use the API to sign in again and I don't supply credentials, where are those credentials stored? Is it my responsibility to store those credentials in my application and then reuse them, or does Link itself store the last credentials used?
Okay, so Link will save, there's a regkey to turn that on. Link will, by default, will save the last credential that that's correctly signed into Link client.
Okay.
So if you don't provide any valid credential while you sign in using the API, it will Link will try to use the previous correct credential to sign in.
Okay. So that's why you can get away with assigning with null values in those first three arguments. Can you supply one of those three arguments? Can you supply just the username and not the password?
Yeah, you can do that.
Okay, and what will happen in that case?
So it's still, Link will try still use the credential that is saved.
Okay. So there's a set of three, and it'll use anything that you don't supply of the three.
Yeah, that's what I've demoed in the application.
Okay.
Yeah, you just put null or empty for all these parameters. Link can still sign in because it previously have signed in.
Mm-hmm. So even if you knew your username and your domain, but you didn't remember your password, now you supply the first two, and Link says, "Well, I know who the username and domain is. I've stored that. I've also cached the password, so I'll just use the cache password." So you wouldn't have to retype that. Is that, will that work?
Cache the password.
So if Link caches all three of the credential components, and then you rekey the first two of them, because you remember them in your application, but you didn't rekey the password.
Okay.
Does it say, "I'm going to use your username and domain, but I'm going to use my cached password"? Is that possible?
I think that's possible, but I'm not pretty sure about that.
Okay.
Because
these are the kinds of interesting corner cases that folks will run into. So.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you can't, you, that Link does a certain amount of caching.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certificate. And so there's some flexibility there as far as what credentials you pass in to sign in. And it does remember how the last sign in.
And if you supply a whole new set of credentials, it'll override whatever's cached.
And then around, so I think there's a case that a lot of developers will run into, which is when the end user signs out of Link.
Mm-hmm.
So chances are in your Link SDK application, you cached the singleton Link client. And so the user, so if the end user signs out of Link, well, that's fine. But so then they might, so then you could either sign them back in your app, or they could, or they might sign them back in. But you have to probably subscribe to some events, as you pointed out, right? Just to
sign
to be aware of, yeah.
The state, yes.
So what happens if the end user exits?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And many end users, encountered this problem.
Okay.
Because the SDK cached the link client instance. But if the Link client process has exited,
yes,
that Link client instance is still cached by the SDK.
Uh-huh.
But this SDK, this cache will be invalidated once you call any, once you do some operations on this cached object, which is not in, which is not valid, right? Because Link process has exited.
Right.
And at that time, you will cache some exception on that. You should do the Link client.getClient again to get the fresh Link client instance.
Okay.
For the new Link client process.
So you're saying it's really important to wire up to those events and be aware when the end user exits.
Yeah. When I said that this event, this operations on the Link client instance, that doesn't include some operations on the Link client object itself. For example, you say Link client dot state. That will not invalidate the Link client instance, because that one is also cached. So you need to, for example, you can do some complicated, for example, search for contact. That will fail. That operation will invalidate the Link client instance.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so then, does there need to be a check for that Link client instance that they need to do, like check for null or?
Check for null or anything.
Yeah.
Doesn't work usually.
Right.
Yeah, okay. It doesn't work.
Okay. So they just need to make sure that they get a new instance.
Yes.
Okay.
So we have attached the three sample projects into this meeting. So you're welcome to download all three of these attachments and go through the code at your leisure.
Awesome. Okay. We have another 5 minutes. Are there any more questions around sign-in and sign-out, some of these tricky use cases or around contact management or present subscriptions, IM conversations? Okay. Okay, we have somebody typing a message. Maybe it's a question. No, maybe not. All right, well, at this point, maybe we should wrap things up. Do you have anything to close with, John?
So where do we go from here? Once we have the second part of this series scheduled, I would recommend that the folks all come to it, because it takes where we left off, which is a simple IM conversation, and allows you to enhance it with all kinds of great features like conversation window extensions that let you spell check or let your users spell check text as they type it and before it's sent into a conversation. There's some really great features of the docking feature we touched on briefly that allows you to seamlessly incorporate Link's conversation window into your own application and give your users a seamless experience as though the code was all generated by you, which is a good feeling to have. You can feel like you get to take some credit for everything. What else? We are...
Device
Master. Oh, that's right. Yes, this is another interesting one. We've had questions around swapping audio devices and video devices in the middle of a conversation and other kinds of things like that. And we'll be able to cover that in brief in a demonstration of the device's namespace of the model. And I think you'll get some benefit out of that, especially if you have sophisticated users who have, say, multiple webcams attached to a PC or two audio devices like a USB phone and laptop speakers and headset. You can swap between those using this code that we'll present. But that'll really flesh out the conversation experience within the Link client, and that's a great set of walkthroughs.
So we don't have a date for that, but that will be around 2 weeks from now, once we get everybody confirmed. And then we have another Link Roundtable presentation scheduled for May 10th, again at 9 a.m. And we did get feedback that some people would prefer a different time, so in the future we will try to accommodate our friends in Asia. But on May 10th at 9 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time, there will be a presentation around creating a screen pop using the Link SDK. So this is a contact center scenario that I think a lot of developers are thinking about right now. And that will be by Oscar Newkirk, a consultant. I'm sure if you've been on the forums, you know who he is. He's probably answered one of your questions already. All right, so at this point, I guess we'll wrap things up unless there are any final questions. Thanks, everybody, for joining, and we'll talk to you again soon.